There you go. The next talk will be about retro chips, self-made historical hardware rebuilt in FPGAs. It's about retro computing, which lots of people usually associate with FPGA with emulators. But maybe some people in this audience also use the original devices. I don't actually want to call you old, sorry. And that's actually the same for our speaker. Back then, all of that was very modern, and now it's called retro. And lots of people have the problem as well that lots of these things only are getting emulated nowadays. And that's very nice. We can replay all of those games that we discovered many, many years ago. And maybe some of you are even writing emulators or developing on them, which is amazing and awesome. Feel free to give yourself an applause for that. And I think all of the others can also applaud. Thank you. But I think the big applause, you rightfully held back for our speaker, Till Habbaum. You might know him from GPN, where he already held some talks. He would call himself a free-time hardware hacker. But he has lots of experience with FPGA, and in the coming talk we'll tell you how you can program these things, but also how you can build your own hardware with these things to build your own retro machine back at home. And now, a big applause for our speaker.
Danke. Vielen Dank.
Thank you very much. I assume lots of you already used Arduinos. Let's do it the other way around. Who has never used an Arduino or a similar device? Apparently, everyone did. Okay, so I'm here to recommend some different things. So we already had the introduction. I don't really need to introduce all of this, the old retro cult. Lots of it grew historically. The beginnings of gaming and are worth keeping around. And of course, we have loads of emulators for that. All of us use them. We are really thankful for their existence. But one thing that's somewhat missing from the experience is the hardware itself. The emulators are somewhat there, and of course, in the emulator code, there is also some description of how the hardware worked back then. But the entire thing about like what exact chips are these and how did they work is lost within the history. To the left here we have the Amiga, and to the right we have the C64. Some really old computers with old chips. You really barely even can't buy any of these chips anymore. Some you could still until a few years ago, but loads of these are now breaking down. They really weren't designed for these long operational times. And are breaking down very slowly. And after these 30, 40, 45 years that these have on their backs, the hardware really is not very reliable anymore. So, of course, I could just have a look at the emulator source code. Of course, that should describe the functionality. You could have a look in it. And so, for example, I had a look at the Vice C64 emulator. That's basically 30 megabytes of source code. And just the CPU is over 100 kilobytes. So there's a lot of know-how in there. But if you're looking for any interesting details, you're really looking for a needle in a haystack. And trying to find out how the hardware worked back then from emulator code is basically impossible. Software doesn't really seem to be the right method to describe hardware. And now the question would be, why would software not probably be able to describe this hardware? Where's the problem? Well, the problem is that hardware is working in parallel, and software really doesn't, usually. So in this example, for example, the C64 had at least one CPU that worked step by step, one instruction after the other. But with the 1 megahertz clock that we had back there was at least once per microsecond. It had to do one of those micro steps each microsecond. And at the same time, the video controller that shoves all of the pixels onto the screen, that one pushes all 126 nanoseconds, gives out one pixel. If I had to do that, I would probably build an emulator that would just push out one pixel after another, and every fourth pixel maybe it would have to look at whether the CPU is still doing its proper thing. Those are rates that even for a modern PC are actually quite hard to compute and handle. And these update rates and these context switches at this rate are something that even modern CPUs really aren't intended to do. And so maybe, I guess we could just have the CPU running for a really short time, and that's one piece of the program. And then every couple of milliseconds, I switch over to the GPU emulation, and then do that. And on the bottom left, you can see there's a small Galileo that I built at some point. It's like a little software arcade thing, and that's basically what it's doing. It can just run old Galileo games. It, for a couple of microseconds, will run the CPU, and then if he has enough pixels in the frame buffer, he will run the GPU emulation. And that works, but sometimes it doesn't. Especially with some of those old real-time computers. I don't know if any of you have seen these old games in real life. I'm putting a frame around these things. That's because back in the day, those usually ran on CRTs, and that meant you had to adjust how big the image was on screen. And because it's actually kind of difficult if a computer is writing text onto non-displayed parts of the screen, they just made the image smaller, so it doesn't really matter how much the CRT cuts off from the outsides of the screen. That's why we had those borders around the image usually. The hardware basically did that. You really couldn't write anything to that area. But then there came some ingenious programmers that decided they could actually write into that frame buffer out there. And on the top right and the bottom left, you can see, wait, there are actually pixels in the area where you can't usually drive. And that's because they really put the CPU and the video chip hand in hand, working together, and they hacked around with the configuration registers of the GPU. And that's really where you can integrate your CPU and video chip very tightly with each other. The CPU has to react really tightly to where exactly the GPU is currently in its scan line, and vice versa. The GPU has to pay attention to where exactly the CPU is currently in its computation. And you can see the Atari was made to display loads of interesting color and huge images, and that was actually possible. But if you have to rebuild this all in software, that's really, really difficult. And that's why all of these modern emulators really also need very modern and fast CPU, which is not always used to and useful and adequate to properly display this old functionality. And now the question is, we of course could describe all of the hardware in these sorts of schematics that describe the functionality, but the chips are, of course, only these little packages, these little rectangles, but the content of the chips is usually nowadays not documented, and back then not as well. And then maybe we could display all of that in code. That would be called an HDL, a hardware description language. That's exactly where we can do that. Those are very old languages. There's a couple of them, but the very well-known ones are Verilog and VHDL. And Verilog was originally developed to simulate hardware, actually, and VHDL to document it. But you can actually use both for both purposes. And you can use them for synthesis. And that's where things get interesting. Because who actually wants to document things in their free time? When we do that, we actually want to have something from it. And the idea here is, if we describe the hardware, we want to actually also be able to revive it. And there we can see on the left some VHDL code. Oh, actually, no, this is Verilog. And on to the right, you can see what it does. It's running a Pac-Man. And that's a Pac-Man written in hardware description language. And now you probably want to know how that works. Like, how would I describe some hardware in text? It actually looks pretty similar to a regular computer program. This is some Verilog. You could, for example, declare some integer variable and then some wire, for example. This is actually like a wire, and then you maybe have some other wires that have buttons connected to it, and one with an LED, and then you can connect them with some logic gates. And then if both buttons are pressed, then the LED would turn on. You could say, well, that actually looks pretty familiar. You're telling me I shouldn't use Arduino, but that looks basically exactly like Arduino code, right? It's almost exactly the same, right? Is it not? Yeah, well, let's use a different example, a little bit more complicated. So we have three LEDs. One turns on if I push both, one turns off if I push one, and one only turns on if I don't have any one pressed. And of course, all of that should happen at the same time. And if I put that into my Arduino code, I could do the same thing, but it has one major difference, and that what happens in the Arduino sketch is happening sequentially, one after another. And that's the big, big feature of these hardware description languages, and what also makes thinking about them sometimes a bit difficult, migrating actual software to a hardware description language, is that it looks fairly similar in its functionality, but the difference is in the hardware description language, everything is happening in parallel. And that's why when in the software we have all of these individual steps with like print one pixel, print another, print the next, and do different things, you can do this, which means you can separate them. I can independently describe a CPU and a GPU, and I can say, like, define all of the behavior of the video card first and not even think about the CPU that might come in later. And I can also account for the fact that there are loads of different chips that have very different functionality, and I don't have to think about their specific interaction at every single point in time. And with all of their functionality, I can really just define the interfaces between video and CPU, for example. And do you know what that one is to the left? Yes, that's the SIT chip from the C64. I can also describe that in hardware, but that's probably where we are hitting our limits, as there are some limits to this technology. I can only describe digital technology. And the SID was really amazing, but half of it was us in analog, which is really difficult or impossible to describe in hardware description language. It's really not possible in this form. Also, things happening at different times are also really difficult to describe in hardware description languages. FPGAs really don't like it. There are also some other pitfalls that can occur with hardware description languages, but generally all of this parallel stuff the HDL can do much more easily. But you really have to think about it. The idea that everything happens at the same time is hard to think about. If you're looking at this in Arduino code, you would see, okay, this LED turns on, off, that's it. In software, that's correct. But if I wrote that in a hardware description language, then what would happen? How would this happen at the same time? Well, what actually happens is, well, the LED is off. The only thing that happens is the last thing that's defined. And the last state is kept the way it is. And you can maybe add some exceptions to that if you want. And also, you can't really debug this, right? You can't put a breakpoint in there or do some debugging. And it's not really that easy, but in the end, it works very differently, even though it looks very similar.
Und wenn man das dann einfach mal macht mit so FPGAs, dann ist es sehr interessant. Also was kann man, what can you do with hardware description language? Sorry, I've documented my PC very nicely, that's nice, but yeah, I can simulate it. And I have a big pile of waveforms on my screen, and I can see how the signals propagate. It's a little bit like an oscilloscope. You can see what happens at which point in time with a circuit. And if you've done your work, then the chip behaves like the original. And there's also an opportunity. I can decide I'll use real hardware. Like, I really want to build that thing that I just documented. So what do I need if I want to do this with hardware? I don't want to use Arduino. That's been stuff from yesterday. What do I need? So you can use an FPGA. Then you need an FPGA board, and you need something to connect it to your PC to transmit the code, the HTL code on the board, and you need a synthesis software to configure your chips. That's the three things you need, and I'll walk you through this. How can I buy this? Who wants to start with this? This is a tutorial. An FPGA chip that you can use for retro usage. You need some memory, because they had it, so you need it. I will probably output video. I will probably have input, maybe keyboard and mouse. There needs to be a mass storage, and I want to output audio. So maybe for an 8-bit machine, maybe I want to have a VC20 or C64. So there's a value 8,000 LUTs. That's the unit on an FPGA that can compute something. If you order something on AliExpress or Amazon or something, you have this LUT value lookup tables. And from my gut feeling, I can say if you have 8 bits, you need 8,000 logical units. That's where you should start from. I need something for a video output. I need some interfaces for joysticks and keyboards. And then, of course, as a mass memory, I suggest an SD card. So you can buy a Terrasic D1 or something. The FPGA vendors will build them so that we can experiment with them. And if you really want to have a product, then we know what we are doing. And then there's an option. You can buy a Tango Nano 9-key. It's a very small chip. It's I think it's on the market for about a year. I can also upgrade if I want to have a 16-bit, Amiga, Atari, like these. Then you need maybe 20,000 lookup tables. There's Terrasic D2, the one, or Tango Nano 20K. These are the phrases you can Google for if you want to get started. And then you sometimes need USB as an interface because, yeah. And video HDMI is something you probably want to have. So what's coming up? The usual big players were Xilinx, which in for real is Intel, one of the two FPGA vendors, and then Altera is AMD for real. They have big boards. They are not as cheap. They have everything on it. You can connect your hardware, you can test it. That's what we use for FPGA experiments. But then there are these Chinese small boards. They are new to the market. There's one, the Tang Nano 20K. It's a little small. It looks like an Arduino. It charges you only a piece of it. They're really nice because they don't charge you a lot. They are small and they come with a lot of stuff. Of course, you can come up with this in entire hardware. 20 years ago, I built this board 2012. The cheap boards were not there. The 1,000 euro boards back then were too expensive. So that's why I came up with one. I wouldn't do that anymore because there are these cheap Far East products that's cheaper. If I use a developer board like this, then a lot of controllers are already there. So I don't have to consider how to connect my computer to the PC, the board to the PC. I have USB. It's shipped. I only need synthesis software, an IDE where I can code and then download the code and program. And usually you'll get this for free by now. Sometimes they have big closed source blobs. There are some open source versions. I never really use them a lot, but the big players are the established ones. They work, and yeah, but they're big and bulky, and maybe you'd like to have support for the smaller, newer ones. Yeah, if you are going cheap, then you have a little bit more trouble, but maybe you know it if you use open source. On the other hand, you have big forums. There's pros and cons to it, but yeah, it will work. So there's a little FPGA board we bought. We had like 15 euros that we spent, and now we're starting it. Let's just start with an Hello World. In hardware description language, it would look like this. And you have the inputs on the top, and then the clock and output, the connections this board provides, and then the counter is incrementing the clock. The clock is incrementing the counter, and there's some RAM, SD RAM, It looks terrible. Usually, you would in an emulator, you would just malloc. And if you really come up with an SD-ROM controller, there is a lot of code you need, but you don't really have to like reinvent the wheel. You can just Google it because others did this. And yeah, don't code what you can Google. The same holds true for HDMI. And if you want to do something on your own, of course you can do it, everything on your own. And then if the Arduino doesn't really work like this, then you can switch to an FPGA. The burdens are not like not smaller, but different. They're cheaper, smaller, and much cooler, and I think you can discover something from it. You can connect everything with everything on an FPGA board. You can download a CPU in the on the web, and then you can just transfer it. There's a chip on the one side, and there's a description on the other side on this slide, and you can just connect everything. And you can go there piece by piece. You don't like have to start with an Amiga or a C64. You can like start with a smaller machine, maybe some very old tiny computers. And yeah, for 15 euros chips, there's nothing that you can download like this. You just prototype it, and then you start from scratch, and it will work. Or you can also have help from Far East. They'll provide you with some constructed chips. On the right side is from myself. On the left side, other people just redid it. Yeah, what you'll get from it, you have the chip documented, the hardware is there, but it's also runnable. You can use it. It may look a little bit stitchy, but you just 3D print it for a nice keyboard and or some fancy mouses. You can 3D print, so you'll like go there step by step and. In the end, you don't need a lot of money, 30, 40 euros, you can redesign chip, you can redesign the hardware, and then you can revive the old computers. I would like to invite you, take a cheap board, 20, 30 euros, get you started, look for the chips, and you'll find description for the CPUs, of the classical CPUs, the video controllers, and then you just connect them, and then you build a chip with a output of a video that is displayed on an HDMI display, and then you will feel the difference. It's not a small display, it's like something that you wouldn't experience with an Arduino. So I want to invite you to do something different than Arduinos. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. We still have 10 more minutes for questions and answers. Are there any questions from the audience? You are getting a microphone. Yeah, I do have some questions. So what synthesis tools are you using? Or what synthesis tools is the hardware from the Far East coming? And also, where does the description of the chips actually come from in the end? So actually, the synthesis for these old Far East boards, the company is called GoWin. They have their own IDE. It's called GoWin IDE. I think you have to register for it, but it's free. I think it also works with Yosys, but I haven't really gotten that to work yet. The second question was, where do the chip descriptions actually come from? Well, so there are a couple of sources for this. You can, of course, use the data sheets of those old chips or CPUs and try to build something that works similarly. But what's much more cool is actually decapping the chips and taking high-resolution photos of the silicon dies. And by shaving down those silicon layers, you can actually draw the entire thing transistor by transistor and then rebuild that into VHDL. That has actually already happened for a couple of the big CPUs in the C64. The big main processors actually have been scanned entirely, and their descriptions are actually available on the internet. I can just load them into my project. All right, there's another question back there. In the far back.
Well, you can take the first one. But in the back, there's another question.
There's another question there. Okay. Hi. So, in the beginning, you mentioned that there are some problems with analog chips. Are there newer solutions for this? Is it possible to re-describe these things or maybe actually even redevelop it? So, yeah, actually, well, a couple of ideas. Two people have those ideas, but it generally doesn't work because the manufacturing techniques have changed so much that you really can't rebuild the same chip remanufactured again the way it was back then. You can do that with all of the digital technology. But rebuilding an analog chip is, I think it's basically impossible.
The guy in the NASA shirt.
Okay. The guy in the NASA shirt, please.
Bitte nicht wundern, ich spreche zwischendurch Englisch, weil wir multilinguale Heralde
sind. Hallo. Ich habe mal eine Frage. Wie sieht es
aus? So, yeah, I have another question. So, what does it look like with IP cores? Are these things publicly available? Can you just download them?
Für was zum Beispiel? Naja, keine Ahnung.
For what? Well, for a CPU, for example. Well, yes, all of the important stuff is open source, basically. You can just Google for Z80 VHDL and you can find it. There are loads of GPL-licensed projects. One thing with these modern RAM chips is actually NSD RAM is mostly available. With DDR3-45, you probably need a proprietary IP. And then you could try to do that, but somebody could actually try to control one of those modern RAM chips. It's actually really, really difficult. The kinds of technologies people use nowadays to control them. But for all of the simple stuff, the IP is freely available. Any more questions? They're in the back, maybe?
Danke.
Yes, thank you.
Ich mach grad in der Uni auch,
so, in university, I'm currently working on a small project where we are also implementing our own MIPS chip in VHDL.
Ich hab auch schon von
VHDL and gehört. I've also heard about Verilog, was davon and I was wondering which one of those is easier to use. So, you know, like how people generally start with one thing and then you realize, well, I should have learned another thing. There are more tutorials available for one, but yeah, okay. Well, this is mostly a matter of taste. You can generally describe everything with both, and there are also actually translators from one to the other, and it's not really that much effort to translate code from one into the other. Have a look at both. Most of the time, you just took one of the nice examples that you found somewhere, like a Blink sketch for Arduino, and you use that as your introduction, and that's the first thing you learned. But with software, generally, if you start with like multiple languages or something, you can maybe have like colliding interfaces or something. That's really not that much the case here. Both Verilog and VHDL can be used in a big mix of things. Most projects actually are combined from both. And since the interfaces are actually just wires, you can really just wire together Verilog and VHDL parts. It really doesn't matter, just go for whatever you like. And even mix it if you want to. Are there any more questions?
Der Herald läuft.
Nehmen wir mal an, ich habe jetzt meinen Computer.
The Herald is running. Okay, so let's assume I have completed my computer. Some old player console. Like, how do I get at the data that I want to have on there? Like, for example, games. Yeah, well, there are a couple of options. Sometimes there are ROMs, also known as ROM chips. You generally don't need a lot of data there. And you can use that. Usually it's 10, 20, or 30 kilobytes, these ROMs. You can just implement one of those into your computer. Yeah, and what you do, you just load all of that data using some sort of state machine from the SD card into one of the RAMs you implemented. That's basically how it's done on the Amigas and the C64s. Just load it into RAM and then use it from there. That's a little more tricky than with an emulator, of course. You have to put some thought into that, yes. So with the old consoles, you could use just ready-made ROMs. Is it really as simple as just connecting some sort of device to the machine? Or, like, are there incompatibilities with, like, voltages or something? Well, Okay, 5-volt FPGAs basically don't exist anymore. If you have one of those, you need a level shifter or something. But if you know into which direction data is moving, you can maybe even use a voltage divider. There are ways to adjust these voltage levels. You can connect cartridges, but you need to maybe do some voltage shifting. Look for level shifters. You will find loads of examples.
Bitte gerne jetzt eure Fragen.
Are there any more questions? Right now, that's your last chance.
Gibt es Fragen aus dem Internet?
Are there any more questions from the Internet? Is there one from here? Ah, there's here. There's one here.
Kannst du mal noch ein paar coole
Okay, can you give some more examples of things that people have built and why and what you're doing with them? Well, it started with me rebuilding my home computer, the Atari 12ST. I started with that and published it, and I really couldn't live with people rebuilding Amigas, but not the Ataris. And then I built the Sinclairs and the MacULs and whatever. And back then, I built the small board, the small self-developed one, which a nice Polish seller then put into series and sold. There were some sequential projects that some other people made that is actually based on that one adapter board that I built in 2012. And that was basically the catalyst for this explosion there. Which brought this breakthrough where basically all of the game consoles are available now. Even on the more expensive boards, but for these cheap boards, it's actually not that easy to find lots of various machines for them, because the more expensive boards are more like 600 euros, this one is more like 30. That's why I started doing this. I wanted to build a really cheap gaming console, but now, since these FPGAs have gotten this cheap, I could actually get back into this project. And because the everything that can be done on the big FPGAs, that's mostly done. But with these small ones, there's still some work to be done. And if you actually do it, if you do manage to fit it inside one of these small ones, these cheap ones, then you've contributed. Yeah.
Noch eine Chance für Fragen? Zwei geht noch, eure Chance.
Okay, there's a chance. The last chance. 3, 2, 1. Okay, that's all of it. I think you answered all of the questions. Well, thank you and a big applause for Till.
Thanks for listening to the English translation of the talk.